You're listening to Greater LA on KCRW, the show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. Hi, I'm Steve Chiotakis. Women from all over the country are coming to California seeking abortions. That's because more states are banning and restricting access since the U.S. Supreme Court issued its decision on the Dobbs case overturning Roe v. Wade a year ago. Traveling for care can be extremely challenging for the patients, and it's also hard on workers in places like California, where abortion is still legal.
I mean, I'm tired. I'm not going to lie. It's exhausting.
Alex Marine works at several Planned Parenthood clinics in Orange County. Last month, she and her coworkers announced at a rally in Anaheim that they want to form a union. Well, more and more reproductive health workers across the U.S. have been turning to organized labor to protect their well-being since the Dobbs decision. And these workers in Orange County, employed at the nation's most recognizable provider of abortions, could be California's first to unionize. KCRW's Megan Jamerson reports.
Alex Marine says her plan was always to work in reproductive justice after college. Soon after graduation, she started volunteering with the Planned Parenthood affiliate that covers Orange and San Bernardino counties. She would help them staff events where they would set up a table.
And then I would be at those same tabling events talking to patients, to students, trying to educate like communities.
Then one day, the volunteer coordinators told her the Santa Ana Clinic was hiring a front office medical assistant.
And I never thought I would go into the medical field, but I thought it'd be like a foot in the door.
She got the job, and soon she was floating between six health centers in Orange County. She says being at the front desk is not just about processing health insurance and booking appointments. It's also about
talking to patients, hearing their stories. It's educating them sometimes at the front, too. And it's basically just overseeing the patient's entire visit.
This gave the job special meaning for Marine, but things started to change during the pandemic in 2020. First, there was the fear of getting sick. Then people quit and positions stayed unfilled. The clinic still tried to see the same amount of patients.
Like, I considered quitting so many times.
Marine says the front and back office workers complained that the number of patients on the schedule was not sustainable and that it was affecting patient care. And then there was the pay. Marine makes $22 an hour, and she says her former front office coworkers left for better pay elsewhere. When the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade in June, things got busier. Planned Parenthood in Orange County, like so many other abortion providers in California, saw a surge of out-of-state patients making appointments. That's when Marine and the other administrative workers started talking to the UFCW about forming a union for the front desk workers at the Orange County clinics.
That's kind of when I realized this, I can't keep working like this. It's just not going to work long term.
Since the fall of Roe, reproductive health care workers have turned to unions for help. Five Planned Parenthood affiliates across the country have unionized. That includes clinic workers in seven states like Massachusetts, Pennsylvania, and Minnesota. At the Planned Parenthood clinics in Los Angeles, they are seeing a pattern of peaks and valleys with out-of-state patients. And these patterns mimic the change in laws around abortion, says Sue Dunlap. She's the president of the LA affiliate.
For example, if the laws change in Arizona, we'll see an immediate spike. But then what'll happen is it'll sort of slow down. And I don't believe that that means that people aren't still traveling for abortion. I believe that that means that the system has adjusted and that people are finding different ways.
Also, Dunlap says it's getting harder to tell who is coming from out of state because more and more patients aren't revealing where they're from. Abortion advocates are telling patients not to reveal their addresses as some states explore how to punish residents that cross state lines for care.
And the laws are so much more punitive that I don't think we necessarily know what comes next, but I don't expect it gets better.
This is happening in states across the country where abortion is still legal. Take Kansas, which is surrounded by states with strict laws.
What we're seeing is both like a huge increase in volume.
Dr. Jennifer Kearns performs abortions in both Kansas and San Francisco.
But also just people you know, experiencing great difficulty in even trying and even getting to the clinic.
Kearns remembers one day back in December when the Kansas clinic she works for got 16,000 calls to make appointments. The clinic in San Francisco has not been nearly as busy, but burnout is still real across the medical field right now. Kearns says there's a real feeling that access to abortion care will continue to shrink in some parts of the country, and workers where it is legal will have to be ready to adjust.
It's been really hard, I think, for the workforce. I mean, I think, you know, this is a group of people who have chosen this work because of how meaningful it is and because they believe so strongly in it. And I think, you know, not unlike other types of mission-driven work, it leaves people kind of vulnerable and susceptible to overworking.
Overwork is one of the complaints of the Planned Parenthood workers back in Orange County. According to Planned Parenthood Orange and San Bernardino counties, it was really rare to have an out-of-state patient before 2021. Then came the first restrictive abortion law in Texas. That August, they had 3 out-of-state patients. After the Dobbs decision ended Roe v. Wade, things picked up that summer. In the first 2 months, they saw almost 80 patients from outside California. There was another surge of around 50 in October. Now they're getting around 35 out-of-state patients a month. Today, administrative workers say they want changes to the number of patients the clinic sees and wage increases. They are asking for these changes because the out-of-state patients that are still making it to California often require more attention and care, says Alex Marine.
We already have such a high volume of patients, and then we have these other patients from out of state coming here for something that only we can help them with, and then wanting to be there for them emotionally or, you know, just make their uncomfortable stay a little less uncomfortable. So it just, I don't know, it's like more of a mental load too now.
But as so often happens during the unionizing process, the bosses see it differently. Nicole Ramirez is a spokesperson for Planned Parenthood Orange and San Bernardino counties. She says the workload has been manageable.
We've seen 387 out-of-state abortion patients. So, and just to put that into perspective, that's about 2.6% of total abortions that were performed in that same time frame at our affiliate. So again, while we are incredibly proud to be able to provide this critical care for people who are unable to obtain it in their own state, it's a very, very small increase.
Ramirez also pointed to their total number of patients, which she says increased 1% over the last year. Their goal is to see 3 patients per hour, which is more than the 2.6 patients they currently average. She also says while they struggled with staffing at the end of the pandemic, they've increased their team size by 16%. They also offer market rate salaries, have absorbed the rising cost of insurance, and given inflation bonuses. So where is the disconnect then?
You know, I can just have the data to say, here's what we're doing, here are the facts that we're doing. I'm not sure.
Planned Parenthood Orange and San Bernardino counties is not voluntarily recognizing the union, which is typical. They also told the National Labor Relations Board they think the unit should be expanded to include back office medical assistants. This could delay the union vote for months while the board investigates. While workers wait, abortion access will continue to be a political issue nationally. And that means abortion care workers across the country will feel the pressure. For KCRW, I'm Megan Jamerson.
You're listening to Greater LA, and you know, this reporting, well, it's not like pulling a rabbit out of a hat. It requires resources to have the producers and the production team put this stuff together, the equipment to cut the interviews and to assemble them, the people who do the research, etc., etc. It all takes money, and that's why we're here asking you to help us out right now at kcrw.com/give. If you've given in the past, thank you for your support. How about upping it a little bit on this final day of KCRW's SOS Pledge Drive? Save our summer. The KCRW you know and love is at risk. Give now to keep all of the events and the programs and the podcasts that you enjoy, that you use, safe and on the air and at the ready. The countdown is on. So here's the deal. We need to raise $400,000 by midnight tonight to stay whole in our operations. And there's $25,000 on the line today. Donate today to have your dollars doubled by an anonymous KCRW champion. You really can save our summer, but only if you act right now at kcrw.com/give. And thank you so much for your continued support of public radio. Still to come, with a lot of organizing, a handful of strikes, and more that could come, union leaders and workers are predicting a hot labor summer. That's yours on the other side of this.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
More now of Greater LA from KCRW. I'm Steve Chiotakis. You just heard about Planned Parenthood workers organizing in Orange County, but of course, there is plenty of other labor unrest shaking up the Southland at the moment. In Hollywood, the Writers Guild has entered its second month of striking, and the Screen Actors Guild workers are poised to join them on the picket lines if they don't hammer out a deal soon. But that's not all. Workers in hotels, fast food restaurants, at the L.A. ports and Dodger Stadium and Medieval Times and at UPS, the list goes on and on. They're all enmeshed in their own negotiations and strikes as well. And that is prompting some experts to predict it's going to be a hot labor summer in L.A. and beyond. Joining us today to talk about it, Lorena Gonzalez Fletcher, who's executive officer at the California Labor Federation. Lorena, thanks for coming on.
Absolutely.
And a guest who needs no introduction, the American labor leader and civil rights activist, Dolores Huerta. Dolores, happy to have you as well.
Oh, thank you.
Lorena, I want to start with you because you have said it yourself that you expect to see this hot labor summer in California. What do you expect that to look like?
Well, we just have workers who are standing up for themselves. They've really been empowered over the last few years. We have workers who are organizing. We have workers who are fighting for a better contract. We have workers who are fighting for a first contract. All of this means that they're taking to the streets, that they're getting out there. They're ensuring that their bosses know that they're going to expect a little bit more, and it's about time.
Dolores Huerta, you've obviously been fighting this fight for decades now. Bloomberg Law did this analysis and found that strikes across the United States at a 15-year high right now. And I'm curious, I mean, how does this compare to what you've seen in the past? Is there another time when you remember seeing this much labor energy bubbling up?
Well, probably before my time, way back when they passed the Wagner Act, and when you had workers organizing all over the United States of America. And we're at a time right now when workers' wages have not kept up with the cost of living. You know, we keep talking about a $15 or $20 minimum wage, but actually, if workers' wages would have kept up with the cost of living, workers right now, our minimum wage should be more like $40 an hour. And so this is what's happening, and we see the rise in homelessness in our country, the fact that people cannot pay their rent, everything that is going on right now, the price of food that is going up, gasoline, et cetera, workers are having a hard time keeping up and being able to sustain a living, getting enough income to be able to live on.
Have you seen a time? I mean, I know the minimum wage at the federal level is still 7.25, and that hasn't changed in years and years and years. In several states, including California, it's much higher. In California, I believe it's what, $15.50, and I think it's going up through the years as we go forward. Have you seen anything like this inequity when it comes to pay? You know, when you're talking about corporate CEOs as opposed to common workers who work at those companies?
To me, it looks like the 30s, you know, when they had the Great Depression, when you had all of these millionaires. Before they started making it legal for labor unions to organize, I think we're kind of in that. If we want to compare what's going on now, I think we have to look back into the 30s and see what was going on then. And we know that something has to change. You know, there's a lot of attacks on labor unions, a lot of laws that have been passed that make it very, very difficult. When labor unions, I want to talk about farm workers, you know, they win their elections, they get the representation, the employers refuse to bargain. I know they tie their labor unions up in court, and oftentimes they don't really even get what they struck for. So we know things are upside down, and the country is paying for it. And again, I'm going to refer to all of the people that are homeless right now, they can't even earn enough money to pay the rent, and so they're getting evicted.
Lorena, one thing that's really set apart this era in L.A. labor is the sense of solidarity that has developed between a lot of these unions. We saw the teachers union and SEIU standing strong together. We're seeing it again with the Writers Guild on strike, which has seen support from SAG-AFTRA, of which KCRW content workers are members, we should disclose, and the Teamsters especially. So talk a little bit about, Lorena, this effect that it's having on the labor movement as a whole.
Well, you know, we are seeing record solidarity, and that means that every worker is recognizing what other workers are going through. The labor movement, both those who are already organized, were just totally captured by what the Starbucks workers were doing and trying to organize. You know, we've watched Teamsters in particular with UPS. They have really a strong solidarity portion of their contract, so they don't have to cross a picket line, and they have not done that. And that was a huge issue, of course, when our UAW graduate workers at UC were on strike. You know, it really does change the game. And what I think all these workers are seeing, just like you were saying, is this disparity. CEOs are making more than they ever have, 400 times that of the average worker. We have more billionaires than we've ever had right here in California, more billionaires than anywhere in the world. And yet we have the homelessness that Dolores is talking about. We have the income inequality that we all see every single day. And it used to be that we thought about it like, oh, the minimum wage workers are having a hard time. Well, that has grown and grown where we have an insecure middle class, and yet we have the very rich and these mega million corporations who keep paying their CEOs and their stockholders enormous amounts of money. There's tons of corporate profit, and yet none of that is getting to the average worker who's doing the work. I think we're seeing it across industry. And because of that, workers are aware of what's going on, and they're showing support for one another.
It's not just big companies, though, right? With corporate CEOs making, as you say, 400 times or whatever the amount is the average worker at those companies. But it's small businesses, too, where we're seeing organization happening, right? Organizing happening. What do you say to that small business owner who says, I can't make it if I have to, you know, pay much more money?
Well, collective bargaining isn't always about wages. It's about giving workers a voice on the job. And so when workers choose to unionize, a lot of times they have issues that go beyond pay, go beyond healthcare. Sometimes it has to do with some reliability and scheduling, or it has to do with sick days or paid family leave. But having workers empower themselves. And I think after the pandemic, workers see how important it is to have a say about what happens in their workplace. And that's what having a union contract is about. And coming together with the employer and having a negotiated collective bargaining agreement is what makes it work. And so it works for small businesses as well as large businesses.
I know fast food workers have been pushing back especially hard against rules that have prohibited industry-wide organizing in their field. And I'll ask you both, you know, Lorena, starting with you, talk a little bit about the changes that they're looking for.
Well, you know, we passed in California a bill that would give a kind of an industry standard. It would give the fast food workers a voice at the table with government, with the governor's office to set, and fast food companies, to set a standard in the industry. You know, they've been especially vulnerable. We saw them work through the pandemic, put their lives at risk without PPE. We saw before that they were subject to a lot of the sexual harassment and Me Too movement without the kind of recourse that other workers got. We see that they are always making the minimum wage, and the minimum wage does not rise at the level that is necessary in order to stay in your house and raise your kids. And so for them to have a voice on the job as an industry was very important to them. They passed a bill, and yet these mega millionaire corporations like McDonald's and Carl's Jr. and Jack in the Box are now referendizing that law. They want to take away the voice on the job that these workers earned.
Dolores?
Yes, I totally agree with everything that Lorena said. And I just want to say to the public that is listening, please, please support your labor unions, okay? Without labor, we would not have weekends. We would not have minimum wage. We would not have Social Security. We would not have health care. The eight-hour day, everything that we have, public education, came from labor and labor leaders.
How do you thread the needle, though, when you have big companies – especially in California, who say, you know, if you keep demanding so much more of us, again, putting all of it aside, the disparity in income and all of that, when they say, we'll just get up and leave. We're not going to stay here anymore because we can't, quote unquote, afford to pay our employees or afford to do business in California. What do you say to companies that take that line?
Workers are the ones that have to make the money that they make. And if they can't pay their workers, they should not be in business to begin with, okay?
Lorena?
You know, I agree. I would never disagree with Dolores Huerta. That is a point. If your business model doesn't work, maybe something's wrong with your business model. But we also have to be realistic. McDonald's is not going to leave California, right? A lot of these companies, especially the service sector companies that threaten to leave, know that a quarter sometimes of their market share is here in California. They have to negotiate with us, quite frankly. And second, as California continues to push and continues to ask for more, we're seeing other states do that as well so that they can't escape the raising minimum wage. We need this kind of action everywhere, and California is going to continue to lead the way.
While initial unionization efforts and strikes get a lot of attention, we don't always hear about what comes next. How many, Lorena, of these newer units are actually securing contracts?
Well, that's one of the biggest problems, and this is why we need federal labor law reform, quite frankly. We see companies like Starbucks, even Planned Parenthood, totally ignoring the law. We've seen it in the farm worker movement forever. Despite having rules here in California, you see companies that just say, I will not negotiate. Starbucks is the number one that everybody is watching right now. Refuse to come to the table, refuse to bargain in good faith, and try to run out the clock so that those workers get discouraged and leave their union. But we're here as a labor movement to say, we're not going to let that happen. We're going to continue to support those workers. We're going to continue to push for federal labor law reform and to hold companies accountable for breaking the law.
California, as you know, has one of the highest rates of union representation in the country. The number of represented workers, though, actually dipped last year, and membership nationwide for unions hit an all-time low. So what do you make of that?
Well, I would say this, that it's because of the laws and the fact, as Lorena just mentioned, that the employers do not follow the laws. Labor unions spend a lot of time organizing workers, representing workers, going through elections, and then they never get the contract because the employers refuse to bargain. And they're getting away with it, as Lorena says, unless employers can be made to somehow be held responsible, it's going to continue to hurt the working people. And when you hurt the working people, you're hurting society at large.
Do you feel hopeful, Dolores, right now? Hopeful about the future of labor, not only in California, but across this nation?
Well, I think we have a lot of work to do, and we've got to elect representatives to our state legislatures and to our Congress that are going to support working people and that are going to support labor unions. And unless we do that, I don't think it's going to get any better.
Dolores Huerta, civil rights icon. Lorena Gonzalez-Fletcher, Executive Director of the California Labor Federation. Thanks to you both for coming on and speaking with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That's going to do it for us this evening. Next week, a new ban, in addition to the old ones, on gas-powered leaf blowers. A new group that's trying to help people cope with their climate anxiety. Maybe you're one of those. And the area's first plus-size flea market is part of a movement toward accepting all body sizes. That's all next week on Greater LA. Right now, we're tapping you for some extra love during our Save Our Summer fundraising campaign. We're in the final hours, the final throes of KCRW's SOS Pledge Drive, and we do need you to save our summer. The KCRW you know and love is at risk. Give now to keep all of our events and programs and podcasts safe. The countdown is on. And again, just a few more hours, we need to raise $400,000 by midnight tonight. We're talking about, what is that? That's 5.5 hours from now. To stay whole in our operations. Right now, there's $25,000 on the line. When you donate, you'll have your dollars doubled by an anonymous KCRW champion. You really can save our summer, but only if you act now at kcrw.com/give. And thank you for your support. Juliana Mayo, Zoe Matthew, Phil Richards, Ray Guarna, Amy Ta, Carlos Ramirez, Christine Camito, and Christian Bordahl all help put the show together this evening. I'm Steve Chitakis.